A lot of people are terrified of money. They're very afraid of it. And so they feel like it's safer with anyone other than themselves. Yeah. I cringe when I hear people who run a business say they're bad with money. I'm like, you don't have the luxury of being bad with money if you run your own business. You have to get comfortable with the idea that money is what keeps you in business and helps you to serve people.
Hello and welcome back to The Joyous Path to Millions. I'm super excited. Anytime I bring women on this podcast who love talking about money and wealth building as much as I do, I know we're going to have great conversation. So today's episode is for you if you want wealth, if you believe that you are meant for big money, you can feel it in your bones, and you might feel a little bit stuck. It's like, wait, in my mind, I know that I'm meant to be rich. And then I look at my bank account and I'm not quite there yet. And I'm not sure how to bridge that gap. We'll be diving deep into just entrepreneurship, wealth building, money blocks, like what gets in the way. And in order to do that, I have a guest on the show. So before I introduce her, hi, in case you're new around here, I'm Emily June Wilcox. I'm the host of the podcast. I'm a seven-figure entrepreneur, a mama of two, and the creator of the Money Wound Medicine program. The reason I have this show is because I believe that when we heal our money wounds and step into wealth, the planet gets better. We need women that are showing up in their passion and their creativity and not from obedience and obligation, which is what happens when women don't have money and don't feel like they have choice and power in their life. And so I am so excited to welcome Natalie Bullen to the show. She is founder and CEO of Unapologetic Wealth. And before we dive into all the juicy topics today, Natalie, you want to just share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Hey, I'm Nat Bullen. I own Unapologetic Wealth, and Unapologetic Wealth moonlights as a sales coaching and sales consultancy firm. We really transfer confidence, the confidence to be able to charge what you need to stay in business, the confidence to be able to build wealth, and the confidence to stop caring what other people think about you. So you can get out there and crush it in sales. So that's a little bit about me.
That's it. Just those cute little topics.
I love it.
You know. Just a little. I heard someone define sales one time as a transfer of enthusiasm. And I was like, damn.
Accurate.
Yes. So accurate. And so I love that you're talking about a transfer of confidence, because how can we be enthusiastic if we're not confident about what we're doing, who we're offering it to, and that they should be as excited about it as we are?
Pretty much. I mean, here's the thing. You're always selling. We all are always selling. Always. If you got your kids to eat broccoli instead of cake for dinner last night, you sold them on something. So I love to hear people who previously thought that sales was outside of their scope start to really love it. That's one of the best things about my job.
Yeah, I love that so much. And I'm so glad that you're out there like doing this good work, because I know that a lot of the multi six figure women that I work with that are wanting to step into seven figures, they don't feel like they're great at sales. They feel like they're really great at what they do, at their like subject matter, that they're a leader in their industry, that they've somehow kind of in a way stumbled into a multi six figure business through word of mouth, through referrals, but they still don't have that identity of like, oh yeah, I'm great at sales and I can scale this to seven figures. So what do you have to say to people like that?
I don't think there's a magic pill or formula. I don't think there's anything intrinsically about me that's like, oh, this person was destined to make six figures or seven figures. I think that we become the sum of our actions, the sum of our choices, and the sum of our beliefs. So if you have a belief system that says that I only deserve so much, or if you have a belief system that says that you deserve everything, I think your life will mirror whatever that belief system is. So that's what I would encourage someone to do. If your life doesn't look the way you want, you need to examine your beliefs, because your beliefs drive your actions. And your actions are what create the life that you get.
Yes. Yes. I always say like your bank account is your evidence. It's like you can tell me that you have great money mindset or whatever, that you, I don't have any blocks for millions. And it's like, okay. And our outer environment is our clues. So like your bank account lets you know actually what's congruent with your belief system right now. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that we need to know the rules of the game so that we can figure out how to play it better.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So did you always, is it any surprise that you went into this line of work? Like, did you always know you were going to be an entrepreneur? Did you always feel like you were good at sales how did it all happen?
I'm an accidental entrepreneur. It wasn't my choice at all. I think having a job is a lot easier if people are just looking for like an easy life. Yeah. Like, this definitely isn't the easiest solution. And I used to suck at sales. I mean, sales is a skill. It's something you can be taught. That's why I think it's so interesting when I meet people who are just like, Natalie, I can never do what you do. And I'm like, I don't understand where that comes from. I don't know where that belief is that there's something intrinsic about the Nat Bullen that isn't something that they could do if they spent hours doing it. Like, most people who spend hundreds of hours doing anything get better. I don't know that I've ever met a person who's told me, I have spent hundreds of hours on this one topic and I am not even 1% better than I was when I started. I've actually never met that person. So I think we assume that people with money or people with success have always had it. We assume that it was handed it to them. We assume that they inherited it. We assume that they have a rich husband. We make assumptions that say, this person had a handout and I didn't. And that's why they have a result that I don't have.
Yeah.
And then when you get to talking to them, you realize I had every opportunity they did. I'm a proponent of billionaires. I know that's very unpopular. Mark Cuban is one of my favorite billionaires. And he grew up middle class with like a parent who was an educator. He started a business that went under in the dot-com bust. He went to a regular college, not an Ivy League school. So it's interesting when people are like, well, yeah, that's because they're rich. Well, how did they get rich?
Yeah.
Like, what did they do? What did they learn? And I feel like success leaves clues. There's so many clues. If you're in 2024, you've got hundreds of years of blueprint of how to make this work. So it's interesting when I meet people who are like, I'm bad at sales. And I go, okay, what's the last sales book you read? I haven't. What's the last sales course you took? I haven't. Have you ever worked with a sales coach? No. How many sales calls a month do you book? None. Well, how could you expect to get better at it? It doesn't sound like you've put any focus on it. And anything that you don't focus on doesn't have an opportunity to get better. What you focus on grows. And so I would love to encourage people to focus on getting better at sales and to focus on becoming rich if that's what they intend. That way their actions can start to align with the things that they say are valuable to them. Or they could just admit that they don't give a damn about making money and stop wasting our time.
Oh, preach. What you were talking about, like with Mark Cuban and whatever, I'm going to call myself out because I used to put myself in masterminds and coaching spaces and such. And the person teaching would be saying something that didn't directly apply to my business, or their story was slightly different than my story. And I used to focus on the differences, and I wasn't even fully conscious of it for a long time. But essentially what I was doing is, oh, that won't work for me. Oh, I can disregard that. Oh, nope, their story is different than mine. So I was actually looking for reasons to not believe it, not trust it. And it's like, as soon as you do the reverse of that, where you're like, okay, how can this apply to me? How can this apply to my business? Where can I see some similarities between me and this other person? It's like a whole new world opens up. The skies part, the angels sing, and you will see yourself like getting really different results just from that shift in mindset.
I agree. We often look for reasons why things can't work out. And that is why most things don't work out. I would like to look for reasons why things like can work, but that takes an awareness, because most of us were not raised by parents who have strong money mindsets. So we inherited the way that they feel about money. And so if you had parents that used to tell you that money doesn't grow on trees, or that Black people don't have the same opportunity as white people, or that you have to work twice as hard as men just to be recognized, and you start to internalize those things, then when you don't get a promotion, when you don't get money, when you don't close a sale, you say, oh, it's my gender. It's my race. Yeah. That's why that couldn't happen for me. And you stop trying. Because if I truly believe that being Black is the reason why I can't have money, then why would I even try to have money? Clearly, I'm going to be Black forever. Like, I understand there's lots of things that people change about themselves as they age, but I think that anybody would say that I'm probably going to be Black the rest of my life. Like, I don't think that people will allow me to change my race just because I want to not be Black anymore. So if I really believe that about me, how does that affect what I do? So we have to be careful with making these casual covenants with right. bad money mindset.
Right.
Because they'll keep you stuck.
Totally. And it's like, it's sometimes it's comical. Like, I think everyone can relate to the idea of being Black might not be an advantage, right? Like, we, even if you don't want that to be the story, like, that's at least somewhat in our awareness. Like, yes, that could be true. I was reading an article yesterday, this guy who just got arrested for anything, something horrible that I don't even want to say on the podcast, but I was reading this article and he had sued his former employer, which was Progressive Insurance, for wrongful termination and for sex discrimination against men. And I'm looking at the picture of this white dude's mugshot going like, wow, he was working in the insurance industry and he sued them for sex discrimination against men. So it's funny, but it's like,
it just shows you. Who am I to say that he wasn't discriminated against?
This is true. I mean, maybe he was. Probably
bizarre, but I think that's a Hail Mary to get him out of whatever legal hot water.
But it's like the point being, when we want to have a story about why we can't do something, we'll figure it out, whether there's really any evidence to support it or not. Because it's like, last I checked, we live in a patriarchy, and if you're a white man, like, you won the lottery of race and gender as far as your chances of being ultra wealthy. But it's not a given, and anybody can rewrite any story.
And most white people are poor, too.
Absolutely.
And we're just talking about, like, raw numbers.
That's right.
The number of multimillionaire and billionaire is it's infinitesimal. So, yes. Like, maybe he had, like, a better chance, but I can't say he had, like, a good chance.
No.
we all have you can't get wealthy by default. And this is the whole premise of unapologetic wealth. You've got to take an action. Unless you are an inheritor. And even then, because I do financial planning for inheritors, you still got to make good decisions. Right. There are lots of people who inherit millions of dollars. I mean, most generational wealth is lost in two generations. So two generational passes, most generational wealth gets lost because you'll have a grandparent or a great grandparent who's really frugal, lived through the Great Depression, had money, and then they pass it down to boomer kids who pass it down to millennial kids, and then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not that financial awareness there. And a lot of people are terrified of money. They're very afraid of it. And so they feel like it's safer with anyone other than themselves. Yeah. I cringe when I hear people who run a business say they're bad with money. I'm like, you don't have the luxury of being bad with money if you run your own business. You have to get comfortable with the idea that money is what keeps you in business and helps you to serve people. So you get the opportunity to just say, I'm bad at it, and just leave it at that. You've got to either improve or hire some help or both.
Yeah. And I saw you post that on Facebook, and everyone listening, you need to friend or follow Natalie on Facebook. She's Agreed. Dropping truth bombs there on the daily, but it's so true. And a lot of my clients are agency owners and they've got W-2 employees and they've got team. And sometimes they don't want to be the person who's making all the financial decisions, and they're kind of running their team a little bit like a democracy. And it's easy. Everyone's so happy to hire someone. And then a couple client contracts end, and it's like, guess who has all the pressure of making payroll and trying to figure out what's going to happen next? It's like, it's not your whole team. I guarantee
it's you.
They're still happy with their paycheck. You're the one who's trying to decide, do I pay myself less? Do I dig into savings? Do I make a personal loan to cover this cash flow? So it's like, as a founder CEO, first of all, you need to pay yourself well, because the stress and pressure that you're under is unlike anyone else on your team. And secondly, you got to listen to my girl Nat and understand that you don't have the luxury of not being good at this. You got to figure it out, or you got to get people on your team that can help you interpret what's happening.
Or both. Like, there's no shame in having a CFO. There's no shame in having an accountant. Like,
it's wonderful. Highly recommended.
Right. So I don't really understand, like, why. I don't get what people's trepidation is, especially if they're making the money. I don't understand. But, like, again, it's a money mindset thing. And on our side of the internet, it's real weird. I'll have clients that'll pay me $3,000 a month, but won't hire a bookkeeper. It's not even a money thing. Huh. It's literally a money mindset. They don't want to see the numbers. Mm-hmm. They don't want to read a P&L. They don't want to see how much debt they've actually racked up trying to make this business right. work. They don't want to know. So that too, like, you can't be negligent or avoidant. Not if you're the CEO. The CEO has to be able to step up and say, this is what's in the best interest of the business. This is what's in the best interest of the board, which until you incorporate is you. And it's not a democracy. The United States is not a true democracy. True democracies have one big problem, death by committee. At some point, someone has to make the decision. So you can't, unless you have a business partner, you can't go into it. And I meet women who are like, well, my husband won't let me invest in this program. And I go, oh, okay. What percentage of ownership does your husband have in your business? Oh, he doesn't have any ownership in my business. Gotcha. So why is he your comptroller? And then they're silent, because then they really don't have a good answer. And they're like, well, we make all of our financial decisions together. Do you? Did he consult with you before he bought that truck or toolbox or went to Lowe's or whatever it is that he did? Like, you have to give yourself some agency. And a lot of women are either not willing to move unless everyone agrees with them.
Yeah.
So if their husband pushes back just a little and goes, why do you need to hire that coach? They're like, oh, I don't. I'm sorry. It was just a thought. Like, they completely back down. But being the CEO of a business means I have to make decisions. And most women go into business as freelancers, especially Black women. They're more likely to start a business impromptu because of job loss or because of having children and not having childcare. Like, the circumstances around which women enter entrepreneurship are very different than the circumstances that surround men who enter entrepreneurship. It's much more planned and usually better funded when men decide to go into business. Women are more likely to be like, I just need the income right now. I just need a few hundred bucks, a few thousand bucks. I need to be able to work from home because I don't have daycare or childcare. It's transitioning out of that mindset that I'm just here to make a little money to I'm here to grow a business that can sustain my household. That's a very different conversation than just I need to make a little money as a freelancer.
Yeah. So you called yourself an accidental entrepreneur. What were your circumstances that got you into this?
COVID.
Yeah.
100%. I had a job. I mean, it was fine, I guess. I worked at Wells Fargo for almost 6 years. I was sick of the scandal. I was really tired of that because I worked on commission. And so having a job where people didn't trust the bank anymore because of the fake account scandal that never, ever seemed to end. It was one scandal, but because of the news coverage and the ongoing legal and like it just never ended. Mm. And so I had clients who were pulling out their whole positions at the bank. I mean, I got paid based on assets under management. Well, when the assets leave and go to Charles Schwab because they don't trust Wells Fargo anymore, I'm the one that lost out on that money, you know? And I was doing financial literacy out in the community. And when the world shut down, I missed it. So I went on Clubhouse, which was really popular at the time, and started my speaking thing back up. And people were like, you know, you really ought to do this like professionally. And I thought to myself, I had gotten laid off of my part-time job because I was working two jobs. And, you know, the American dream really hasn't ever worked out for me. I think that's what I was thinking at the time, was like, I've done everything right. I went to college. I racked up student loans because that's what you do. And ended up filing bankruptcy because I had gotten sick and had a bad breakup and had to move out of my own apartment to keep from being abused by this man. Thank God I had the ability to be able to. And I thought to myself, you know, when has the American dream like paid off out for me?
Yeah,
it really hasn't. I remember depleting my savings down to $1,000 because that's what Dave Ramsey tells you to do. And then when I got sick and lost my job, I called those same creditors who I had just made thousands of dollar payments to, like, hey, I'm not going to be able to make my minimum $100 payment next month. And they're like, oh, well, I'm like, but I just sent you like $2,000. Like, can you help me out? They're like, nope, you're still going to owe us $100. So like, I think I knew deep down that this wasn't the end for me. And I didn't have a whole lot to lose. To be fair, I still have securities licenses. I could go work at any bank that I chose to at any time. Chase just moved to the area. And that manager wants me bad. So I'm like, it's not like I'm throwing a career away. If I really just had an itching to go back to opening checking accounts and originating loans, they'd be more than happy to have me back. But like, can I say I ever like sat around and was like, Natalie, you are an entrepreneur. You are meant to change the world. You are meant to save lives. No, no, I can't tell you that story. Far from it. And I'm pretty lazy. So I can't say that I'm going to do this forever either. This is why I tell people, like, if you really want to work with me, you should do it sooner rather than later, because I really am like Garfield the cat. I really prefer to nap and eat lasagna and nap some more, preferably.
You just need to monetize your napping and lasagna eating.
Listen to me. There's a woman who does that. She gets paid to sleep on Twitch or something. Like, she just
sleeps. I read that headline and I was like, this woman's a freaking genius. I think she made like 30 grand just letting people watch her sleep.
Yes. I was like, oh my God, this is the smartest thing ever. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm considering it.
Thinking about it. Okay. So how are people working with you now while you're in accidental entrepreneurship / thought leadership / CEO of Unapologetic Wealth? Like, what are people hiring you to do?
Oh, on paper, sales coaching. I'm like, it's the best two words. Neither of the words are accurate, though. It's just the best for SEO purposes. People hire me when they are ready to accelerate their revenue and document how they do what they do in their sales process so that someone else can take it over. If you've gotten to six figures, you're doing all the things. You're the marketing and the sales, but you're also the client delivery, the client communications, maybe the legal, maybe the financial until you get a CFO. And so my goal is to get that sales thing moving like clockwork to where people want to work with you. I don't have to do a ton of outreach anymore, although I enjoy it, because I have enough leads in my pipeline and an ability for them to close themselves. So I like to create what I call a pre-sold system for my clients that can have people coming in and already knowing this is for me, right? So like hypothetical, if you were my client, be like, Emily, why do people choose you? The real reason. And if you don't know, we'll do some market research. And then we'll look at where your people are at in the buying cycle out in your audience in their buyer journey, and then start crafting really great content. On the back end, we're going to tighten up your application, your pre-screening, your pricing to make sure that when people do get in your funnel, they've been able to convince themselves. When people book sales calls with me, they get a video that kind of tells them all about me. I was just talking to somebody on Facebook about this. I've had two no-shows in almost 3 years. We're almost at our 3-year anniversary. It's in 5 days. In 3 years, I've had two no-shows and almost 400 sales calls.
Wow.
Like, I've eradicated that problem. So when people are like, oh, a third of my people don't show, or half of my people aren't qualified, or 20% don't have any money. Like, these are problems that can be fixed. But if you don't know that, if you think that's normal, you just keep the status quo. So in short, I put my clients in a environment where it would be unlikely for them to not make more money. Like, we just create an ecosystem where they have very little rejection, very little objections, and great fit prospects that want to buy their services. And then they get the confidence, right? Like, if you charge $10K for your signature offer, I'm sure it's more than that, but if you charge $10K and I convince you to like sell it at 12, you know, based on the value, based on what you told me, based on your P&L, I think you can get 12, and you pitch it and they say yes, your new price is 12K. So like the upside is exponential, because at that point, Nat Bullen didn't just get you $2,000. She got you $2,000 on every qualified prospect in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Plus the gains that you could get from paying yourself more, investing in the stock market. Like, what does that $2,000 per client annualize into, like over a lifetime with interest? That's a huge number. And that's like one. I also push people to charge more than they feel comfortable if they're experts. And I only coach experts. I know a lot of people say that, but like, I'm serious. Like, if you're like, I coach attorneys, accountants, people with like MDs, like I don't get down in the snake oil salesperson bit of the internet. Yeah. And I think that's what puts me in demand too, because I have securities licenses. People know I have something to lose. They can go to FINRA broker check and look me up. And so I'm not willing to risk my securities licenses to get money from people. Mm-hmm. Likewise, I sell to people who also have something to lose and want to make sure that they don't get caught up with regulators.
Yeah. So I'm still having a hard time understanding. You're working at Wells Fargo. You start talking on Clubhouse about financial literacy. How does that turn into, I'm a sales coach, I understand how to get your leads pre-qualified, I understand, like, you're talking really sophisticated levels of sales and marketing, and it doesn't seem like you would have had those skills from Wells Fargo. Am I wrong about that?
Oh, well, I mean, that wasn't my only job. I'm 35. It's just a job that I left. I've worked for Verizon in sales. I've worked for DirecTV. I worked for Sears TeleServe in outbound sales. So,
got
years of sales experience. Yeah. Wells Fargo is just like my most recent gig because it's like my best paying job, like my job. Yeah, I also started off as a money coach. It just didn't last long because I realized that people, like the post that I made, people don't actually have a budget problem. How many people with money just choose not to pay their bills? I think that person's in the minority. I think that person is very rare indeed. I think people who are fully financially realized meet their obligations in a timely, consistent manner. That's what I believe. So when people fall behind on their bills, when people exceed their budget, it's because they didn't have enough money. Like, that's straight line logic to me. And so when I went out and tried to be a money coach, I ran into people. I went out and tried, can't afford to invest in the stock market. Started your business, you have clients, and that's when they would admit they were broke. Mm-hmm. And so once I realized that most entrepreneurs were broke, I was like, oh, okay, I'm on the wrong side of this. I'm in the manage money bucket. I need to be in the make money bucket because this is the problem. The problem is that people don't make enough money to pay themselves, pay their team, pay for all the systems and ops, pay for marketing and ads, pay a lawyer, pay a CFO, put money into their brokerage accounts, make sure that their kids have 529 plans, make sure they have CDs, make sure they get in REITs, invest in real estate. They just don't have enough money to do all the things. So they only do one or two of the things. And like you talked about earlier, they waver. They have so much team that they can't pay themselves. So now they're kind of impoverished, even though they're running a six-figure business. I also think there's lots of shenanigans out there. Like, I had a six-figure month in June. And what I mean is we collected $110,000 in Stripe and PayPal.
Right.
I don't mean that I got $110,000 worth of verbal commitments. Right. I don't mean I got $110,000 worth of signed contract. I mean the money went into the account. Yeah. Do you know that most people who say that don't mean that?
Yes, I do. But I didn't used to know that. And so now some people are good about saying like sales versus cash collected. But those
are the same thing. That's what's so crazy. You shouldn't have to even make that distinction. To me, a sale is a payment. If you had a $100,000 offer and you sold it and someone paid you $10,000, you have $10,000 in sales, you have $10,000 in cash, and you have $90,000 in accounts receivables. And receivables are not sales. Because what a lot of folks are doing is counting that whole hundred as a sale this month. Then every month as that client pays, they're calling that sales too. Yeah. Well, how much was it? If it was 100K total, you can't do both. And like, depending on your accounting system, if you're cash-based or accrual-based is how it's going to track with the IRS. But you can't count it both ways. So if you're going to count all 100 when they said yes and paid the 10K deposit, then you can't also count all the $10,000 payments that they make every month. And a lot of folks are counting both.
Yes.
And it's sad that I have to go online and say cash collected because so many people are charlatans and say sales when they didn't collect any money.
I know.
Like, they just got a yes on the phone. They didn't collect a penny. And I'm like, baby, you didn't make a sale until funds were received. Yeah, like that, that is just so, that's such common sense, but I'm just shocked at people. But that's also another thing. Women, we're a little too nice and we'll let people off the phone without firm commitment. But I'm like, if you didn't get a yes and you didn't get a deposit, you didn't close a sale. You just like donated 30 minutes of your time to a really nice person in hopes that they would like you. And I think a lot of folks run their businesses like the friendship show instead of the like wealth show. Yeah. And I'm really, really particular about how I talk about money because I don't want to mislead people into thinking that I did something that we actually didn't accomplish. I'm proud as hell of my six-figure month because the cash was actually there. But I'm shocked at how many people are claiming that they made money when they aren't, or how many folks say that they've made a ton of money on Facebook and then get in your DMs and tell you the honest truth. And see, I get the truth because of the work that I do. I've also implemented a new system where for private coaching, I request P&Ls. It's gotten to that point, but people will lie in order to qualify to work with me. And so just to protect myself and protect them, because I mean, imagine you telling me you're doing 500K and I advise you to get with an ads manager, or I advise you to hire a co-coach. I advise you to start diversifying your income thinking you've got the cash and you're doing 100K.
Right.
So now I've put you in financial duress because you're trying to follow my instruction and you don't have the cash to be able to do so.
Yeah.
And I don't know you don't have the cash to be able to do so until you default on my second payment. That happened to me once. I had a lady who paid the deposit on the call because I like to collect payment on the phone if at all possible.
Yeah.
I collected payment on the phone and the very first rebill NSF'd. And I was like, wow, this is a 6-month agreement and you literally couldn't make it 30 days.
Yeah.
And I don't think people talk about how expensive it is to have bad fit clients. So yeah. I would just rather repel them, screen them, do whatever I need to do.
Yeah, no, I think it's really smart. And I love that we're having this conversation because I like you, I tend to go into things just thinking like, yeah, what you're telling me is true. Like, I just give people the benefit of the doubt. Same thing with the 100K months. Like, I was in a mastermind where everyone was trying to do 100K months. And I was in for a while before I finally realized somebody was like, I finally had my first six-figure month. And then they also said, like, we collected 30K. And I was like, wait, I'm so confused. I read it like 4 times because I'm like, what? I don't understand. And that was how I realized, oh, they're talking sales and cash and not the same thing. Whereas I had only ever run my businesses off of cash collected. So it had never even occurred to me. Only I wasn't even ever. Tracking
right.
how you much fictitious even... money and that's had been.
What it is. It's fictitious. Now, if you go in my Dubsado, it will tell you what is outstanding. It will show an $18,000 contract, and it will show a $3,000 deposit, and it will show $15,000 outstanding. Like, it's tracking it. Like, Dubsado right. knows, and I have a CFO, so we have a cash flow projection sheet that shows when people's payment plans are going to renew, etc. But in terms of how I spend, it's off the cash that we've already got. That's it. That's the only number I care about. But I'm also different. A lot of people built their businesses on MRR, monthly recurring yeah. revenue, and I yeah. didn't. Mm-hmm. I'm a salesperson first. I go out and close business. So I don't trust anybody to pay their retainer, anybody. And I don't build and I don't live my life like, oh, I'm good. I got 7 people that's going to pay me $3,000 this month. I don't have to sell anything because half of those payments are going to fail for one reason or another. So I've gotten better about always selling. Now, my clients are better now. I don't really yeah. have a missed payment issue now. But there was a time when there was really a coin toss as to, and I mean, eventually they would pay. Like if it was yeah. NSF, a day or two later, we'd rerun the car. But even that, having to pay my admin to go behind people 2-3 days later, or folks will say, oh, I owe you $1,000. Can I pay $500 with this card and $500 with that card? You can't get a good result under financial duress. You're not actually going to do the sales stuff that I teach right. you because you're desperate. And right. a desperate person will take any client at any price. So all the work that I was doing would get undone as soon as they got broke. That's why now I'm very particular and I tell folks, it's okay to wait to hire me. If you say, yeah. Natalie, I'm waiting to get the funds together to work with you. Great. Here are some options that are within your budget. I'll ask them, what is your budget for support? Yeah. Oh, it's $2,500. Did you know that I do a half VIP day for that price? Like, but I do not want people to overextend. I don't want people to step out on faith. I don't want any of that kind of foolishness because yeah. I feel like those clients have such a hard time regulating their nervous system, knowing that they probably won't be able to pay their mortgage. And yeah. I was in a coaching program with a woman who paid the coach and not her car note. And yeah. I'll never forget it. She told me in the DMs that she was hiding her car in her garage to keep her car from being repossessed so that she could pay the coach. And I love this coach, but she is serious. She will send you the collections. Like she yeah. is the kind of coach that will like ruin your credit. Mm-hmm. So like she felt like she was between a rock and a hard place. Am I going to let this woman sue me because mm-hmm. I signed into this 12-month commitment, or am I going to pay my car note? And I don't ever want right. a living soul who has been in my ecosystem to have to make a decision like, am I going to walk or yeah. am I going to meet my commitment with Natalie? So I run my business. I could make a lot more money if I was willing to cross some lines, but I'm just not willing to.
Yeah. No, I think it's so smart. It's true. I've been in a mastermind like that too, where it was like, oh, wow, you're trying to figure out how to pay your rent and pay the mastermind this month. Yikes. And it was a $10,000 a month mastermind. It's like, whew, okay. Probably need a little better screening process to make sure that there's only people in here that have the funds and like you said, it's really hard to get results. We put so much pressure on ourselves when we put our back against the wall financially. And unfortunately, there is a lot out there on the internet where it's just like, you just have to leap, you just have to go for it and figure it all out. And it's like, there is a time and a place for that. But I feel that a lot of women interpret that as, okay, I just have to act and then like the money will figure itself out later. And that doesn't happen. And it puts people under tons of stress. I know a lot of people who went into a lot of debt and then they had shame around it. And then they had to go back to a job and then they felt shame around that because it's like, it didn't work. And it's like, no, you just got sold on quitting your job and going all in too soon. I was all in on being an entrepreneur for 3 years while I still had a corporate job. Not because I didn't believe in my business, but because I understood that my business needed time to grow and blossom before it could pay the mortgage consistently every month. And I didn't want that kind of stress in my life.
Well, and that's what's so weird. And people encourage this kind of behavior. I was in this community that was really popular, run by this Black woman who everybody knows. And I remember I had closed, I don't know, maybe I asked this question like beginning of 2022 or like end of 2021. And I was like, hey, we're going to do six figures. Should I quit my job? Or when did you quit your job? Not even should I quit mine. When did you quit your? The answers were appalling. The answers were after my first client. I booked one paying client, quit my job. I quit my job before I had a paying client. I was flummoxed at the answers. Truly, these women were jumping ship at the first chance. And like I keep telling folks, hating your job is not a reason to start a business. I said it. If you hate your job, the answer is not start a business. You're probably going to hate that too. You need to find a job that you like if you hate your job. That's the straight line logic. Yes. I don't know why we leapfrog to that. I also don't understand how people who were making six figures at their jobs would think, I'm going to quit my job before my business even does six figures. Like I've met people who quit when their business was doing $2,000 or $3,000 a month in gross revenue. Right. How could you possibly pay yourself the $8,000 a month that you're accustomed to if your business doesn't even make $8K a month? Why would you step down your quality of living just to be an entrepreneur? And that's the biggest scam. The scams keep changing. The first scam was home ownership. Oh, you're a homeowner. That's how you create wealth, which is not true. If you want to be an accredited investor, for instance, you either have to have $200,000 personal income, $300,000 joint income, or $1 million net worth, excluding your principal residence.
Yeah.
So wealthy people know that principal residences don't make you rich, but that was the scam. You're middle class, buy a house, and it'll make you rich. It really kept you poor. Then it was college. If you don't want to flip burgers at McDonald's, you have to go to college. So the millennials got the college scam. The new scam, entrepreneurship. If you want to be successful, you have to quit your job. You have to go all in and you have to start a business. First of all, who's going to work for us if everybody's running their own business?
Right.
Like, does anybody ever stop to think that someone has to be the employee? Second of all, if you don't have the resolve and the skill set, you're screwed. There's so much stuff I can't do. Sales, I'm great at. Marketing, somewhat. Client delivery, I'm excellent. Everything else, I suck at it. Tech, ops, all of it. Legal. I pay out like $10,000 a month in just retainers.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things that I just don't have the skill set to do. So if you're like me with a limited skill set, you're not going to be able to quit your job and just do this on your own and grow it consistently over time. You also hurt your social security as you age. I'm showing my financial planner, but like you get your social security based on your highest earning quarters. So if you have a job and it's your highest paying job ever and you quit it, you could be impacting your social security that you get the rest of your life. And if you're 30 listening to this, you're like, who cares, Nat? You'll care when you're 70, because when you're 70, you might be sick and too old to work and stuck on a fixed income that you cannot change. And there's so many elderly people who are poor, house poor, underinsured, living alone, who cannot afford necessities, can't afford long-term care. So if you haven't focused on building wealth in your 30s, what makes you think it's going to magically happen in your 40s or 50s or 60s? Becoming wealthy is a choice and it's predicated on income. Don't let these happy stories about janitors who saved up to become millionaires overnight sway you. Your earning capability is your biggest asset as an able-bodied person in their right mind. Don't squander your high earning years trying to prove to someone on Facebook that you can do it all and be a boss babe. Like, don't be crazy. And if you have a spouse or someone who's helping pay the bills, use that as a anchor to be able to get your business going before you just, oh, we're just going to jump off the bridge. I mean, I meet so many people who boomerang back to corporate, which I don't think is bad, but it's bad because of the circumstance, because they didn't want to go back to corporate. So now they feel that guilt and shame around it. I'm like, you never should have quit your job. Like, why did you quit in the first place? Well, I hated my job. You never took time to sit with what it was that you were unhappy with. And most of us go out and create businesses that are just like the job.
Yeah.
You're just not as well paid. Most of us are working like a intern salary, doing twice the work that we did at our old job. I'm just now getting back to the amount of work that I worked at Wells Fargo.
That's it.
Just now getting back down to a 40-hour week, for sure.
Yeah. I had, after my first year of running our agency, I like had a come to Jesus talk with myself, because I was paying myself $5,000 a month. And I'm like, hang on a second. So that's cute. I made $60,000 the whole year. And I worked twice as hard. I stressed twice as much. I had a corporate job where I was making like $150,000 a year, and it was so easy. Wow. It was so easy. So I've
never had a six-figure job. So I always marvel when people say stuff like that.
So I was just like, okay, it's time to get real. It's okay. That was the first year, but like, we got to pick it up, because if shit doesn't change in another year, you got to go back to work. Like, this is nutso. And thankfully it did. And that business has now had 3 back-to-back million-dollar years. But it's like, sometimes we have to face the music, right? And you were talking about that avoidant behavior. It's like, I had to look at the numbers and get really honest with myself. Am I okay with this? Am I going to be okay if it goes on like this another year? And I was like, no, we got to get serious. And I had to raise my rates. And like, there were things that needed to change.
Yeah. And I mean, raising your prices is scary until someone pays it. This is why I tell people, like, nothing beats a failure but a try. I think a lot of times people anchor to their old price, but your people who've never paid you don't know what your old price is.
Yeah.
90% of the time when they go on your site, when they fill out your application, the price is the price.
Yeah.
So you're better to change it than to keep selling something that is selling you into a lifestyle that's unsustainable. I'm the breadwinner for my family. I take that very seriously, that we keep a roof over our head, that we're happy and healthy and fed. So I am not going to allow anybody to put me back into middle class ever. Yeah. No one has that authority to put me in that situation, least of all me. So whatever I need to charge to be profitable and pay myself what I want to pay myself, then that's just what has to happen. And if people can't afford it right now, that's okay. That's what marketing is for. That's why it's so important to get out and market yourself, so that there are always people who know about you who want to pay you.
Yes. And speaking of, can you tell everyone listening like where you hang out online and how they can connect with you?
Yeah, I live on Facebook. Facebook is Bay. I'm the only Natalie Bullen out there. We'll put my link in the show notes so you can find it. I'm also moonlighting on Instagram. You can find me at Unapologetic Wealth, and my website, www.unapologeticwealth.com. If you listen to this and you're like, damn it, that Natalie is right. She's right. I do need to get it together. You can find out all about me. I wrote the copy myself together. Let me know your compliments.
Her website is pretty fantastic. I checked it out and I was like, you can feel your personality in it. And
I hired 3 different copywriters and got back nothing usable. So I ended up writing it all myself. And I'm like, this actually turned out pretty well. So now company policy is just create enough space for Natalie to write the copy, because hiring other people hasn't been, by and large, it's hard. Like, people don't, it's hard to get a sense of someone else's voice.
Absolutely. I think, to me, like, having the truth in something is more important than having it sound just right based on some copywriting course. It's like, you're in your website, and that's important, because if people are thinking about working with you, you want them to resonate with your words and your approach. Otherwise, they read the website, they might resonate with it, and then they start working with you and they're like, wait, what just happened?
Yeah, right, exactly. No, I want people to know that I'm like a loud mouth who talks too much. Like, I want people to understand some like non-negotiable things about me, like, for real, that are very, 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 very important. I've done over 117 Facebook Lives, and most of that is because I don't ever want someone to go, I didn't know that about you.
Right.
I didn't know you were like that, Natalie. This is brand new information. It's like, no. I've put out, I think, the same amount of content as Friends, the TV show.
Wow.
Yeah, a 10-season TV show. So...
Well, those people are making $20 million a year in royalties off of that. So let's just Yeah, let's just plant that little seed that you'll be making $20 million in royalties off of your Friends episodes.
My marketing person is like, I told her, I said, I have a content mountain. I'm a hard client. People are always like, Natalie, you'd be my ideal client. I'm like, it depends. I live in excess. I'm a maximalist. I want it all, and I want it all right now. I'm very bratty and I want everything. And so my podcast has almost 300 episodes. I mean, I don't dip a toe. That's just not the type of person I am. And that intensity intimidates the shit out of people. People are afraid of me. And I feel like it's an insult when people say, you intimidate me. That's an insult to me. So I usually will be like, I need you to heal whatever that is that is afraid of me before you pay me. I'm okay with you being afraid of me over there, but don't get on a personal Zoom call. So I think the best thing that women can do, people, is be themselves. And men are really good at being their whole self, even when they're jackasses. Like, society doesn't tell men that they have to tone down their bad qualities. But I love my bear, all of them. I embrace them and I showcase them and I parade them around like puppy dogs. And that is why I think I'm so successful. Most people spend their whole life trying to minimize what's wrong with. So here's all my flaws as a coach. Here are all the mistakes I've made. Do you want to pay me down there? Yeah.
Well, I mean, your brand is unapologetic wealth. And that sounds very unapologetic to me. You're just like, here it is, girl. What do you think?
This was probably the 30th option I think I could think of. That was, everyone hated it. Market research was like, please don't. And no one knows how to spell meticulous.
That's true.
Although I have found that no one knows how to spell unapologetic either. I find myself spelling that word 20 times a week. This new last name hasn't helped. My maiden name was Johnson. So I spell bullying a lot. I spell unapologetic a lot. I'm like, wow. And it rubs salt in the wound because I lost the spelling bee as a kid.
I love the name. I'm so glad you got it. And I was like, damn, you got the .com too. Like, this is a good name.
That's what I'm saying. When we picked, it had to have everything. We wanted the handle on IG. We wanted the domain name with a .com. Like, those were our parameters. We wanted something that wasn't trademarked. And Unapologetic Wealth was like the only thing that met all of our criteria. Because me and my attorney were trying just dozens, you know, powerful wealth and just all kinds of the interconnected, the wealth tribe, the wealth circle. But I also didn't want it to sound like a wealth management firm because I wasn't managing investments. I was only being a money coach. So it turned out fine, but the initials look like the University of Wisconsin. It's grown on me, I guess. Long story short to listeners, just launch the damn business. If you hate the name, you can always change the name later.
This is true. I know. Entrepreneurship is just one messy action after another, truly.
No, for real. That's what I'm saying. So you might be listening to me going, well, damn, it took her that. Listen, I just needed to find something that worked because I knew this was going to be a legacy business because I don't do things half-assed. So I'm like, if I'm going to do this, if I'm actually going to quit my job, the highest paying job I've ever had, this highest paying job paid me $49,000 a year, by the way. That's the glorious highest paid job I've ever had that I'm referring to. Okay, that's why when you're like, you're making $150, I'm like, what? Why on earth did you start a business? You're actually doing like kingdom servant work. Like, people should worship you like a deity. Cause I can tell you today, had Natalie Bullen been making 150,000, you would never even exist. I wouldn't even have a Facebook page. I wouldn't even a total benefit package of damn near $200,000. Like, what? That is so much money to me. So if you meet an entrepreneur that quit a six-figure job, you better pay her a premium. Ain't no telling what I would charge y'all. Ain't no telling what I would charge y'all if I had been making that kind of money. Like, I had very little to replace. I'll pay myself $4,000 a month and replace my whole salary.
Yeah.
Like, it just didn't take much. But if I had to pay myself $20,000 a month, $15,000, $18,000 a month, all right, maybe. I have a coach I've been eyeing. Her VIP days are $50,000. I'd probably be like that. I'd probably be that person that's like $50,000 VIP day, $300,000 a year for private coaching.
Yeah. And one of these days, we're going to look back on this podcast and be like, yeah, I should have hired her then because now her VIP day is 50K.
Listen, and we are going to Dubai. We are going to eat fancy food. We are going to get micro links and mani pedis. Oh, we're going to eat lasagna and take a nap.
There you go. It's happening. You heard it here first on the Joyous Path to Millions.
That'd be really dope. I'm crazy enough to push that out there and see if somebody would buy it. Like, nothing beats a failure but a try.
Why not? Exactly. You got to shoot your shot. See who's ready to take you up on that. Well, I could just talk to you all day. Thank you so much for being on the show. And I want everyone listening to go connect with you on Facebook. Go check out your website. As a final question, can you share what it looks like and what it feels like for you to be on your joyous path to millions?
It is scary every single day. It is scary to wake up every single day and know that you are the determinant of your own destiny. It's a lot safer and a lot easier when you allow other people, i.e. your corporate phenomenon and your HR department, to decide how wealthy you get to be. When it's in your hands and you don't hit it, it's your own fault. And that can feel heavy. The best advice that I can tell people is to take things one day at a time and to divorce perfectionism. If you align yourself with being a perfectionist, it's crippling. It's not a positive in most cases, and it'll keep you from taking any step and maybe like celebrate more. Like, I'm not celebratory, which is something I'm working on actively. I will say when I do celebrate, I feel a lot better. Like, I feel that kind of joyous part. But I think if you don't feel joy every day, that doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. I think a lot of people expect to have a good, warm, fuzzy feeling every single day in business, but that's unrealistic. I mean, do you have a good, fuzzy feeling about your husband every single day? Sometimes you're a little annoyed. Do you have a good, fuzzy feeling about your kids every day? Sometimes they make a mess. Like, you know, like I think it's okay to experience a human range of emotion as long as you keep going.
Amazing. So your joyous path to millions is scary and it doesn't always give you the warm fuzzies, but nevertheless, here you are.
It's worth it. Yeah, it's worth it. I mean, I don't know what better option I have. Like, logically, the get money slow path of corporate doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. So I'd rather try it this way. I'm excited about it.
All right. Thank you so much for being here. To everyone listening, appreciate you. Thank you for tuning in. Tag Natalie and I. Let us know what you loved about this episode, and we'll see you soon. Do we like Nat Bolin or do we like Nat Bolin? I just love having people on the show who have an opinion and are willing to share it and unapologetic. I mean, my gosh, is that the perfect descriptor for her brand or what? Like, she just loses that vibe of like, this is who I am and this is what I think and you can take it or leave it. And I'm just always so inspired by people like that. And I love the work that she's doing in the world. So I'm so happy that she came on the show. You can tag her on Instagram at unapologeticwealth, tag me at mmakesmoney. Let us know your top takeaways. Here are mine. Number one, having a job is easier. And I love that she just said that because honestly, I actually don't hear that many entrepreneurs saying that, but I kind of believe that too. Like, that was my experience. Corporate wasn't hard. It was a little harder mentally, just feeling like I wasn't doing with my life what I was meant to be doing, but it wasn't hard. It was not hard. Number two, being wealthy is a decision first and foremost. So have you decided? And then are you taking actions in alignment with that? Are you studying what the behaviors are of the wealthy? What are the things that they're doing with their money? You know, I'm always amazed when people want to get wealthy, but they want to avoid debt and they don't understand because they're not looking to see what wealthy people are actually doing. And so then it's like mind blowing when they realize that wealthy people leverage debt. It's like, wait, what? So are you deciding to be wealthy and are you studying and taking aligned action with that decision? Number three, if you're a business owner, you don't have the luxury of being bad with money. I mean, that is just a mic drop in my opinion. And of course, this is my shameless plug for Money Wound Medicine, because if you're being avoidant, that is a trauma response. And there's nothing that Nat or I can do or say to necessarily get you out of that trauma response, because it's not that you don't intellectually know what you should be doing. It's that you're in this like fight or flight. And when you're avoidant, you're in the flight or you're in the freeze. And the way that we heal through that is through diagnosing and healing our money wounds and alchemizing those wounds into wealth. You've got to do that deep, 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 deep work. Otherwise, the behavior will perpetuate. No amount of education is going to change that. Number four, make more money. If you understand that you want to be wealthy and that you want to have these different investment accounts and that you want to be putting money away for the future, that you want to be creating passive income sources, you probably need to make more money. And I love that Nat realized, like, oh, this is not that people don't know what to do with their money, it's that they're not making enough. So I got to help people make more first. And number five, decide to be good at sales. I loved what she said. It's like, if you want to be good at sales, are you reading sales books? Have you hired a sales coach? Are you taking sales calls? Are you practicing? And just trusting that it's something that you, just like any other skill, that you can cultivate it. And it's a skill that will help you a lot in this aligned action toward building wealth. So thank you for tuning in. I've got a great interview coming up with Amy Lee Westervelt. And she will help you get in touch with and develop a new relationship with the divine masculine that lives inside of you. And she does it in such a unique way that it really helps you in life, business, romance, every aspect of life. So be sure to tune in for that. You're not going to want to miss it. I guarantee you it's information that you're not hearing anywhere else. And of course, if you've been enjoying the show, leave a review, share the show with a friend on social media. This is free. It's a free way to help the show. So if you're finding value in this, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. And of course, tune in next week. All right. Talk to you soon.
Listeners like you have made this a top 3% global podcast. So thank you so much for tuning in. Please like, subscribe, share, and leave a review. I also love hearing listener feedback. So feel free to slide into my DMs on Instagram at @mmakesmoney. If you would like to explore hiring me as your money healer and business mentor, hit the link in the show notes or head to explore.emilywilcox.com. Until next time, I'm sending you all the magic money vibes on your joyous path to millions.